This week, three industry experts dissect the Porsche market in front of a live audience.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Andy, Max, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good. How are you?
Yeah. I'm very good. Thanks, gents. I'm very good. Welcome to those listening at home to Nineworks Radio. We're talking to you the morning after we had our Driven Not Hidden Collective visit RPM Technic for our 2024 Porsche Marketplace expert Q&A.
What a good evening it was.
It was fantastic. We're going to bring you not even highlights, we're bringing you the full recording of what Greg from RPM Technic, Henry from Lakeside Classics, and what Jonathan Franklin Cars had to say on the Porsche marketplace currently, and perhaps more pertinently, what's coming up in 2024.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. And I'm glad to say they're all recorded okay. I was a little bit nervous, being that it was pretty new kit.
Yeah, all good.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? It was brilliant. RPM handed over their sort of reception, handover bay, sort of chill out area, and bit of showroom to us, and we filled it with people. Yeah. And everyone got stuck in, and you know, that's not an easy thing to bring together from a production point of view, but you know, Andy was on the case, and I mean, it was a brilliant evening, and I think we've managed to document it really well for everyone who wasn't able to come.
It was nearly scuppered halfway through, wasn't it, by Geese? Well,
by Geese.
He had a coughing fit. he couldn't contain it, so he decided that he was going to disappear off into another room to have a good old
which is good of him in theory.
He tripped over, I'm not sure if he caught the mains lead or the speaker wire, and nearly took the whole lot with him.
Basically, he nearly tipped over the PA system onto the bonnet of a 993 RS on his way out.
Yeah.
And killed all the audio. That's what nearly happened. Fortunately, it didn't happen.
Could have been the result, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think we'll learn from it by buying mats to go over it. But what I will say is, with all the wires everywhere, I did think this is almost professional. to be honest with you, but like, you know, with the speakers we had, and I think there were six of us on the microphones with us, the experts and the audience as well.
Yeah.
And that is all thanks to Driven Not Hidden Collective monthlies, basically, you know, so it's going to really good use. So hopefully it's to the benefit of people listening at home as much as it is people who attended on the evening, and very much Driven Not Hidden, by the way, because it was Baltic at RPM Technic, or on the roads around. Indoors was nice and warm, but it was a absolute ice everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, I had a frozen windscreen when we went outside.
Yeah.
I had to scrape it off with a credit card. That's the only thing I had in the car. It's like,
And yet people had traveled from very far to be there. You know, we had
craziness.
We had people from like Warrington. Neil from Warrington, Matt came down from Yorkshire, we had someone travel down from Newcastle, we had somebody hop over from the Netherlands,
and Simon.
As well. Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, he might have been working in London, but yeah, he was over from the Netherlands in a sense.
Still absolutely awesome. And again, you know, in adverse weather conditions, we'd say on a Thursday night is a school night.
So
it was just a mega, mega, mega effort from everybody. So we are very grateful.
Yeah. I mean, Geese and Andy Bowers, they managed to get out of the city. Andy took his GTS right into the city, and they managed to pick their way out of the city up to Hertfordshire, which is a pretty good effort in itself.
I'd arrived at RPM at 9 o'clock that morning, so I was spending the day there doing some filmy bits and a bit prior to the podcast. But part of the agenda was to take out, they've got a 991.2 GT3 RS with full Manti kit on, so aero, suspension, and brakes. I was going to do a video on that, but that's on Cup 2R tyres, which are pretty much slicks, aren't they? There's not a lot of tread on them at all. And it was so icy.
It wasn't much above zero, was it?
No, looked outside, looked at the tyres, and we said, I think we'll leave that. We've got more to lose than gain in that scenario. So
You should have said, Lee, when I arrived, you could have done a video on my Macan-S diesel, if you like. you should have just asked. I wouldn't have minded.
I mean, it's all content, Max. Someone will watch it. Probably not me.
Probably the biggest video you'd ever had. Maybe you should do it and see what the figures are.
Yeah. Shall we dive into the conversation then, I guess, with the guys?
Well, shall we? We had an interesting... We did get to drive something this week, early on in the week.
Yeah.
The 914 from 1511.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, video and more content coming soon. But what a car.
Loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Yeah, big shout out to Ben, who drove down the night before, actually, from Derbyshire/Yorkshire.
Bakewell.
Up in Bakewell, yeah.
Yeah.
And brought the car down for us to have a play with, really. What an awesome machine. I will say that. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
For the uninitiated, or even people who've seen it on Instagram, because it looks mega. Yeah. What actually is it? Talk me through it.
So it's a 914 body. So you've got basically, you know, the bulkheads, the over the roll bar section, the floor, that's all still as it was, but all reinforced. You've also got the floors front and back, but underneath, all the mounting points have been put in for a Cayman 987. So basically a Cayman bolts, a drivetrain bolts to it from underneath.
That's awesome. Isn't
interestingly, it? The sort of wheelbase is pretty much the same. I think it's only 5 mil difference. I think the 914 is slightly 5 mil longer than the Cayman. So the mounting points have just moved out slightly. And then all of the body panels are carbon fiber. So wings, bonnet, boot lid, all of that stuff is bumpers, everything's carbon. And was it 975
kilos. So 2.7 RS lightweight.
It was proper light, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it really was.
It just felt light driving it. It was up on its toes.
Yeah, and it was the 987.1 Cayman engine tuned up to 400 horsepower, a 6-speed manual taken from the Cayman put in as well. Again, in a sub 1,000 kilos car. Mid-engined or rear mid-engine, so like really nice natural weight distribution. I mean, you know, even just like reeling this specs off, you can get the idea. It's a really clever concept that has been extremely well executed.
Yeah, 3.8 it was bought out to, wasn't it?
I can't remember now. I think it was
3.8. Yeah. So it was originally a 3.4 taken out to 3.8.
Yeah.
Beast of an engine in that lightweight chassis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I think that's kind of why, I mean, Andy, you've kept well abreast of what's been going on with the guys at 1511 Design there for quite a while. Yeah. It's, I guess, because it's so different, you know, in this sphere where we used to see 911s backdated. There are other companies now. We've had Nardone Automotive on talking about their 928 reinterpretation. We've had CAM Manufacture with their 912C on this year. So it's nice, I guess, to see cars from further afield within like the Porsche and I say VW sphere, looking at that reimagining ball as well. So it's just really nice and refreshing.
Yeah, it's a good car. So lots of info coming on that in a video that will be released in January. And also we'll be doing a podcast in January as well.
Yes.
So
yes,
we'll let you into all of the detail then.
Amazing. Yeah. Lucky buggers. What a cool thing to get very some cool FaceTime with. That's awesome.
Well, we got that. And then there's, we've mentioned it briefly with our Works special podcast a couple of weeks ago, but we've got a video coming and a podcast early next year with the guys from Rheen Automotive in Germany, who have reinterpreted a 964, basically putting a 997 GT3 RS engine in the car and then complete new electronic brain. It's, I think, a real game changer. So again, it's something else that's adding into that ever more burgeoning resto mod mix, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because the 914 was water-cooled, not air-cooled.
Yeah.
And kind of, I don't know if I was against it, but I was a little bit unsure what that was going to make me feel. So that was quite interesting. But that 964 is the same sort of scenario, you know, taking an air-cooled design and putting a water-cooled engine in it, which on face value seems a little bit
controversial. Yeah.
I wouldn't say sacrilegious, a bit controversial, something different.
I think some would. Yeah. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's where do you sit on it, I guess. But for everybody that says it's not for me, you'll find someone that will go, yes, please.
Yeah,
and that's exactly the beauty of it, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
So lots to look forward to. Let's dive in then to this was the Porsche Marketplace special live podcast Q&A. It's a very long title. But yes, there's so much information in there. So I kind of said last night at the end of the pod, but I just want to repeat it for the start here, really, is to kind of, you know, strip away, before you listen to this, strip away your own individual biases that you may have and just like really devour what our specialists and our experts are going to say, because the insight they give is unrivaled, really. You won't find this sort of information readily available anywhere else. There's a lot of conjecture. Hyperbole, Max. I know you like that word, but you know, there's a lot of that bandied round at the moment as to what's going on. But this is from the coalface for people who spend their lives right in the mix, so they know
and
exactly what's going
cash.
On. Yes, yeah,
doing
yeah. Well, that's
every
it.
Day, isn't it?
As that's they pointed the out, yeah, they spend yeah. they're spending their money on it. So please do enjoy it. And also, I want to say like a massive kudos and huge respect does go to Greg at RPM, Henry at Lakeside, and Jonathan from Jonathan Franklin, because it's easy in that scenario when we put the phone call in and said, would you mind getting involved? And we wanted three so we could have as much of a rounded look as possible. You know, it's easy to say no at that point and think, I don't really want the backlash from the internet and whatever. It's just easy to walk away. But credit to those guys. They turned up, they gave their honest opinion and gave a load of us a lot of insight. And that's a difficult thing, I would say, to do, is a sense of vulnerability there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's easy to say no, but if you say yes, it's easy to turn up and, you know, play your cards a bit close to your chest and be a bit canny about it. But to turn up and just lay it all out. But I think that's credit to the people in the room that you foster that kind of culture and environment where people, you know, turn up and they feel comfortable, you know, sharing their thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. And it was brilliant for that.
With that in mind, let's cross over to RPM Technic.
Fantastic. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to RPM Technic. This is Nineworks Radio. We've got Max and Andy either side of me. Perhaps most importantly, and we'll come on to our guests and indeed hosts very shortly, but first of all, I'd like to say a big warm welcome to the Driven Not Hidden Collective. Fantastic. From the three of us, myself, Andy and Max, we're so grateful that all of you guys have travelled some, not a small distance,
indeed,
to be here tonight. You are the absolute backbone of Nineworks, and we want to make sure that is very well known. So thank you for joining us today. We are here at RPM Technic. Greg, it's only fair to introduce you first, I guess, as the host. Thanks for having us all today.
Always very welcome, and as Lee says, thanks very much for everyone for coming. I think Neil from Liverpool, is that the furthest? Yeah, a big round of applause for Neil from Liverpool.
I have heard on the grapevine, and we have actually got some prizes, which we'll do later, but one is furthest travelled, and I know that we've got a Liverpool, we've got a Yorkshire, Matt, which again is incredible. I've Newcastle. Heard we've got a Newcastle. So, resident Geordie, apologies, what is your name? Ben. I mean, if any, I think you've won the prize. Unless,
yeah, who's...
Have they really?
Top.
Wow, seriously? Wow, there we go. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. That was a handshake in there. Any raises on the Netherlands?
Any advances?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Good question.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's genuinely blown my mind. But yeah, that's exactly what it's all about. Whether it's driven not hidden or flown not hidden, I don't know. But we're super grateful. So yes, Greg, again, thanks to yourself. Darren's around. Don't know if Ollie's here too. Alex as well. You've got loads of the team here from RPM. So it's always great to come here. You've always got some amazing stuff in stock and in the workshop, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. We've got two more guests on our specialist panel tonight. Henry from Lakeside Classics, you put a shift in to be here as well, so thank you.
I've travelled about 2.5 hours, but well worth it. And Greg, thanks a lot for hosting tonight.
Welcome.
Absolutely. And then to your right, we've got Jonathan Franklin from the eponymous business, Jonathan Franklin Cars.
Good evening. Only an hour.
Only an hour. It's a great effort all the same. So yes, we're in exalted company this evening. There's plenty of expertise certainly sitting to the left-hand side of us.
that I suppose I include you as well in that.
Right? I was wondering.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So lots of market expertise, which aside from the very tasty burritos and the alcohol-free beer, that is why we're here today, to dive into all things marketplace. Now, you guys as the experts have said away from the mic, so hold you to it. Nothing's really off the table, I guess. We're commentating on where we're at currently in the marketplace, where we're going in 2024. And I think if there's three people that know what they're doing collectively, there's decades of experience here in front of us. You guys are the people that know what's going on, right?
It's what we're telling everybody.
Yeah. Whether
that happens or not, we'll find out.
Yeah. Well, I guess just to dive into it, this is our like last formal event of 2023 for Nineworks, really.
Yeah.
So we're kind of looking back on the year and what it's all been like for all of us. So Greg, like, what's your highlight of the year automotive wise?
Professionally, right. it's been an up and down year in terms of sales of cars. In terms of the workshop and business generally, it's been fairly good. But as a standout moment, I reckon for this year, it's probably been when I managed to blag our GT4 for the entire day at the Nürburgring on my own for a closed Manti day. I can't quite remember how the circumstances came about, but it meant Darren Nolley had to go back to the UK. I drove out there, took the van and trailer and the car, and I think it was about 30 degrees. I think I got through 5 tanks of fuel, PV at the track, and I mean, Manti track days at the Nürburgring. If you're into, I don't know, rugby, it's like playing rugby with the England team at Twickenham. You know, it's as good as it gets. So that was pretty much a standout moment. That sort of intertwined with, Jonathan and I were talking about it, just spending some time with some nice, sensible clients that are also, you know, there's a blend, isn't there, of clients that are friends and clients that are clients. And evenings like this, you know, everyone here, nice to chat to. Some people I don't know, some people I do, but, you know, there's never any sort of awkward pauses and stuff like that. So it sounds a bit cliched and a bit cheesy, but the cars are cool. That's why we're all here. But what makes it cooler is the people you spend the time with to enjoy these cars. So, the selfish one is me on my own at Manti, the ring, sorry. But otherwise, it's spending time with like-minded people.
Yeah, not short straw in sight, it sounds, at the Nürburgring.
No, I'm going to see if I could blag it again next year, but I think they're on to me.
And Henry, how about yourself?
So for the highlights of the year, I would say, obviously, we spend a lot of time talking about cars to customers. So the highlight is actually getting to drive the cars. So for me, that was a GT tour with Supercar Driver earlier on in the year. We two days racing across the borders, which was just tremendous fun. You know, 20 GT cars, just great actually seeing them, what they're meant to do. And I'm going to give it joint, and it's not just because you're here, Lee, but that 993 day with Tony Hatter was awesome. The just getting to see you to talk to Tony and answer the questions on the reasoning why he chose the design and what was going on with Porsche at the time. Again, yeah, I think that was an incredible day.
Awesome, yeah, and to see the David Beckham car. The
Beckham car, yeah, exactly.
For me, that was great, having just seen it on Netflix like 2 days before. So, yeah, fantastic. Jonathan?
I think for me, the probably the car-wise, anyway, as you said, the best car this year for me has been a black Ford Lisa RS that I managed to find for a really old client, and he'd been looking for it for about 2 years, and it was a right-hand drive, very low mileage, black 4 liter RS, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys might know better than me. Actually, I think there's six UK cars. With his desired spec of lift and ceramics. So for me, I think that was the Porsche highlight of the year. So
fantastic. What a special car. Didn't get much better than that.
No, so. And for me, that's a car that would have liked to have kept, but anyway.
Can't keep them all.
No, but yeah.
Fantastic. As we get into it then, guys, and start talking about the market, I know you've all been on the podcast before, which we're really grateful for. Having the three of you on here together is brilliant. Could we just have a little run through of sort of background and experience, just so, you know, just to remind people, or perhaps you know, bring people up to speed who don't know?
Yeah, definitely. I thought you were about to ask us who sold the most. It's like, you know.
Yeah, we'll get on to that.
75 each month. So I've been buying and selling cars since 2004. So I started at the volume end of things, like some guys do, working at Perry's, so Fords, Fiat's, all sorts of things like that. So I was there for about a year. Then I went to work for BMW, which I loved. It was a really, really good time. So that was sort of 2005 to 2010, 2011. And yeah, made some good friends, had a good time there. And that
some
was
good BMWs in that era as well. Some,
yeah, very good ones. I remember we had E46 CSLs in the showroom that we couldn't sell. Yeah. Funny times.
Discounting.
Yeah, Z8s that were sat about that everyone just thought were a bit weird. and everyone was getting the hots for X5s instead. But anyway, and at that time is when I bought my first Porsche, not because it was flash or anything. It was because the only one I could afford was a 964. And that's when I met my business partners, Darren and Ollie. And they looked after the car. And then I went to work for Porsche for a bit, which had its pluses and minuses. For me, mainly minuses. It was, I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't busy enough, for me. And then, when I got married, it coincided with the guys moving into this unit and sort of the stars lined up. And so we joined forces, as a threesome on the business. And here we are 12 or something years later. So that's my last 20 years in 1 minute.
Brilliant. Thank you. What about you, Henry?
So from Lakeside, we our business is about 8-9 years old now. So yeah, I've been there since the beginning. My brother and I started it. We started collecting cars. My family had been in the motor trade. My dad was in the motor trade for about 50, 60 years. So we were born into the trade. Luckily we started collecting cars, and due to the timing, they were rising in value, and it was just a hobby that turned into a business because of a passion. And that was 8 years ago. We used to deal a lot in very collectible cars, very high-end Porsche 911s, a lot of the older stuff too. We do currently still deal in that, but we also do a lot more modern stuff. When I say modern, I mean more 997s and 991s now as well. And then we also have gone into servicing, and the business has naturally grown, and we offer more services now as well. And it's been, yeah, an enjoyable journey, ups and downs, and yeah, it's great to be in a night like this.
You're expanding quite a lot at the moment, aren't you? I visited recently for the first time, and you showed me the building that you're moving into. So yeah, it's quite impressive premises. That's to expand the servicing side, is it, the workshop?
Exactly, yeah. We had a tenant in there before, and it was on our little site that we've got. And yeah, so we've just put two ramps in there, and we've got a lot of cars in there at the moment, and just a lot of customers' cars as well that we've taken on SOR. And we've got a little project that we're doing when we have the time. but yeah, the demand for the servicing it keeps increasing. So yeah, it just was a natural progression, really.
Brilliant. Thank you. Jonathan?
So we've never really spoken about this before, but the start of my motoring career was actually very similar to yours. My dad was always into cars and collected cars, fixed them, and actually made parts for the F1, the McLaren F1. And my kind of passion sort of grew from there. Started working at Curry Motors in, I think I was 19 years old, so nearly 30 years ago. In Twickenham, worked there for about 4 or 5 years, and then was asked to go to Hexagon in a finance capacity, because that was my role at the time. I was business manager for Curry Motors. So I actually went to Hexagon and stayed in a business manager role there for probably 10 years, I think it was. And then I actually started a finance business, which fortunately my previous boss, Paul, didn't mind. And that's still running today. So I have that as a kind of an aside business that a colleague of mine now runs. And like I've said to you before, that gives me quite a good indication of what's going on in the marketplace or what's going to happen. Because you probably all know that around 90% of cars these days are financed. So you sometimes get early indications of what's going to happen with the market. So that sort of gives me a bit of early ammunition, if you like, to decide what to do with my own cars and stock. The car side of the business, I left Hexagon about four and a half years ago, decided wanted to do it on my own. I wanted to do things slightly differently, and I had different ideas. Knew I was never going to be as big as, you know, an outfit like that, but was very passionate about selling extremely good cars and rare cars. I probably sell 2, 3, 4, 5 cars a month. Don't sell as many as a lot of people here, but very passionate about what I do, and like to think that everybody who's ever bought a car from me is happy. So that's it, really.
Fantastic, yeah. Jonathan. And again, I think just for what you guys have said there, I think underlines lots of like maybe different bases covered within the industry, which hopefully will give the audience here and those listening at home a very well-rounded idea, I guess, on what's going on. We'll pass over to you guys in the audience shortly to answer some questions. I guess I'll start on behalf of everybody. What the hell is going on? How can we describe the marketplace currently, I guess?
We ask ourselves that every morning. it's well, if I start off, I mean, everything seems to be measured pre and post COVID. Yeah. And it's no surprise, pretty much the curve since April 2020 has been nice and upward trajectory, which is easy to predict, easy to buy stock, easy to give advice, you know, all these kinds of things. And we kind of, it'd be interesting to see what the other guys say, but this year especially, that predictability is, that's gone. To a certain degree. There's certain areas of the market, which I'm sure we'll come on to later, which are, have been nice and stable and easy to manage. But it feels a bit like the last quarter before COVID happened, when there was change of prime minister every 3 weeks. Brexit was a thing.
About that.
Yeah, exactly. Brexit was the thing. And I'm looking at the stats the other day, and it, you know, the sort of run into the December that year was a bit like it is now. It was like 1 week there was 14 inquiries, let's say. The next week there was 3, and it's interesting because part of this game is psychological from our side of things. You then go, oh, have I done something? Are we handling inquiries differently this week? Have we skipped on adverts, or where are we? So, you know, a bit of self-belief is always what's required. But I think certainly since the summer until now, it has been a bit choppy. Although I was looking at some of Auto Trader's stats this morning, and what their figures show that was that there was a sort of an inflection back into sort of positivity, actually, starting from about the first week of November. And again, it'd be really interesting to see how that correlates to sort of the finance world. But we have seen an uplift in inquiries, which typically in turn turn into transactions. So the actual amount of stock that's available has also slightly decreased according to their statistics. And this was Porsche specific. So what they give us is a whole wealth of data. 95% of it is no use to me, but we can go Porsche, two-door petrol, and sort of, you know, choose the models that we look at. And it shows in the summer there was sort of a big chasm of stock, which has then thinned out a little bit, which may be why it's becoming a little bit busier and there's a bit more positivity. So if you'd have asked me that question of 4 weeks ago, I'd have just dropped the mic and walked off. But there's some positivity coming back now, which we found at least, which is good. But yeah, I don't know how's it for you, chaps?
So, I mean, the market is forever changing, isn't it? I mean, there's always a different piece of news that seems to have an effect. I think in general, there's just been a shift from a seller's market to a buyer's market now. I noticed it with inquiries going down mainly in September, mm-hmm. which you usually really look forward to September because it's usually a great month with the new regs coming through, and people, you know, getting new cars or the old ones being dealt to. That didn't happen. We had the inquiries, we had the deals,
Everything was done as usual. You had a deposit, people looking at the cars, viewing them, and we lost about 50% of sales on collection day when people called up and said they weren't going to come. And it was purely because of the confidence and I think its influence from the media. October wasn't great, and then November's been back to normal. Not back to normal, but we've sold the amount of cars that we're looking to sell. What we've seen is on Auto Trader from our internal systems where we, you know, where we advertise the car, we can see how many people are clicking on that car a day, how many people are saving it and viewing it. They use a traffic light system so we can, you know, tell if it's performing well. For instance, I would be happy when market was really good in March, I'd have been really happy with a car if it had, you know, 2 to 10 saves in 1 week. Now we're seeing on some cars 30 saves in 1 week. Yet you might not always get the phone call, and then somebody does buy it, and then you'll get phone calls from other people. Oh, well, I was about to buy that. You know, it's just the lack of, there was a lack of confidence, but I think now, the market has moved. There's been price adjustments. And as soon as as a trader, the thing that we need is people actually buying and selling cars. So if the price is moving, then the market is actually moving. That's a good thing for us. And I think that, you know, when you decrease a car, however much, 10%, it opens itself up into another bracket of clientele. And suddenly that person can afford that car, and then there might be more demand and push prices up, or which had the price hadn't gone up, but that's the type of thing that happened. So yeah, we're seeing movement again. It was quiet for a bit. There's definitely undoubtedly been price corrections. But yeah, there's movement, and I'd say it's probably what you should expect to happen after this. Maybe the supply chains have caught up.
Mm-hmm. I think just to add in there, where you were saying you've had an increase in cars like saved of your stock, I think that's going to be Max adding to his fantasy garage.
I knew that was coming. Although actually, Henry, on that white 901.2, that is me, sorry.
Yeah, Jonathan, what do you think to that then?
Well, I think following on from that, I think people are just trying to naturally, like we all do, call the bottom of the market.
Mm.
I think that's the truth of it, and that's buyers and sellers. Because let's face it, none of us want to get caught out.
Yeah.
Yes, some cars have been. We're going to leave 992 still a bit later, aren't we? But yeah, but some cars have been caught out a bit. But I've sold some older cars recently, and they've achieved really good prices, and they've been really good cars, and they've sold. So I don't think I kind of share your enthusiasm for it, because there needed to be a correction, to be fair, I think. Mm-hmm. And no one really wants to hear that. No one really wants to know their car's fallen in value. But going back to finance, interest rates have definitely influenced that. You know, rates have gone up, but not only that, residuals on newer cars have gone down. Those two things together unfortunately means that payments jump a lot. And some of us all know that by our mortgages and stuff like that, you know, as well. And a few more negative things, but cost of living and all the rest of it, you know, your gas, your electric, your water and all that sort of stuff, none of it helps. So I don't think, and I think also we forget that, I think we've been living in a bit of a, since COVID, we have been living a kind of life with a bit of a different approach. I think everybody had a bit more of a you only live once kind of attitude. They had nothing to do. They had a few quid in their pocket. They went out and treated themselves to a nice car. The finance was really cheap. You know, the residuals were really high still. The other thing is the banks. They've tightened up their criteria. So there will be some people that, because the payments have risen and the rates have, you know, the rates and the payments have risen and the residuals have gone up, they will be not necessarily in the league they might have been a couple of years ago. So you've then got surplus stock at a certain level, haven't you, that that suddenly floods the market. And I think that's where 990s suffered.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go there then. So there's clearly has been much conjecture, certainly that I've seen, about the amount of Taycans on mainly main dealer forecourts, has to be said, and 992s. But is it fair to say there's a split in the market and they should be treated differently to 991s and backwards or classics? Or is there a line? And if so, where?
I think so. I mean, electric cars have suffered full stop. They came down, I'd say, months before. Do you agree with that? I'm talking about other manufacturers as well. So I don't think you can really just blame Taycan. Yes, we're talking about Porsche tonight. So, but I think electric cars in general, there's quite a few of them out there now. They're coming back secondhand now, and the market's flooded with them. Sorry, I've got a bit of a cold, by the way.
You're grand.
So it's not COVID. I did check this morning.
I think the other point to that is that it's a new market.
Yeah.
So historically with Porsches, obviously we're lucky, they've been around for years and years and years. You can kind of go, well, previously when there was a car of this GT type or this RS type or this C2S type, what happened before? There's not been that. So it's kind of finding its feet, and everything, it always does. Like you said earlier, it's a really good point. Everyone just waits for that bottom and then it clicks up from there. Because let's face it, if there was a Taycan Turbo sat over there for 20 grand, we'd probably sell it right now. Hmm. There will come a point where when they then hit again and off they go. There'll be a question mark over warranty, things like that, as they get a bit older. But I think that's the electric market generally is, they just don't have the same love. So it's price-led.
Yeah, they definitely don't have the love, do they?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because who's the end-of-year three buyer of a premium EV? If the new buyer was the corporation tax offset and all that sort of thing, then who is the end-of-the-year three buyer? I'm not sure.
I mean, I'm not sure about you guys, but our kind of attitude towards the electric cars with the Taycans is we'll kind of watch and let the main dealers try and figure it out first, and then
absolutely,
and then we'll see how it goes. I mean, we haven't got the demands. I think, is it next year they have to sell 22% of their cars have to be all EVs. So there are
I think all the big manufacturers. Yeah. My wife works with BMW, and exactly the same. They have massive electric car targets.
Yeah,
it's corporate. So same thing.
And obviously from a specialist point of view, if it's out of warranty, it's new technology, we could be fit with a huge bill. So the risk that it, outlays for us is probably not worth it at this point. So we try and stick to what we know and what we're used to.
Yeah. With the amount, I don't want to add any hyperbole to it, but, again, from what I've seen, there's a few 992s around on the marketplace. Did you
slight under exaggerate?
Well, it's not my.
I can't believe you're lumping the 992 in with a Taycan. No,
well,
that's awful.
I don't know what to say to that. But I guess from your point of view within the industry, where kind of from where I was seeing Porsche were pumping them out, and even kind of GT product maybe, could you guys see this scenario unfolding, or has it been a surprise to you as well? Or
I think Jonathan said, I can't remember, we were out somewhere once and we were talking about Turbo S, 992 Turbo S's. It was about that year ago, actually.
Yeah,
I think, we were chatting about it then. And it was fairly obvious, we're not rocket scientists. There was a bit of a oversupply to the market. And obviously, prices of them were doing really well. We could, on the way back from collecting it, we sold a Turbo S lightweight in special color, and it got deep into 200s. But they build them in higher numbers, and so clearly that wasn't going to last forever. And what I tend to see is there's a certain demographic of buyers that are actually slightly pragmatic to that, because they're like, well, I've been buying sort of cars and lumpy cars for 20, 30, 40 years. I'm used to losing money on cars. It's a new thing that I've made profit on them. So, dynamically, those cars, anything that Porsche made in the last 5 years, you go and drive them, and sometimes people need reminding of how good they are, because you get stuck on the forums, which I don't, but you know, people get stuck on forums or Instagram or, you know, people pub talk type thing. It's like, put that aside, get your bum in one, go and drive one of those cars, and they are absolutely brilliant. So dynamically, they're a different type of car to, say, that 993 RS over there, but times move on, you know, you can't always supply those to the market. So the cars themselves are brilliant, and it's an arithmetic thing. It's numbers. It's just waiting for it to then resettle, and everyone will go. It always happens where we get to a point and we go, that looks cheap, that looks good value for money, and then it kicks. And that's just what we're waiting at. But sometimes it's a sharp one, like COVID, when everyone went, oh, sell my car, boom, actually I've got loads of money spare, let's buy a car. Mm. And it was a nice sharp one, and it makes the market move better, like you were saying. Yeah. Where it's slower because people are a bit unsure, and you've got all these other dynamics in play with interest rates and, you know, all those other things that everyone's already bored of. But that thing where it makes it slower, that's where then people sort of sit around talking, oh, well, you know, these are good news, bad news. It's just a correction, as you were saying, you both have already said. So I like them. I think they're great cars. You've just got to be careful with where you price them. But they do sell. Yeah, we just sold a 992 GTS4, massive spec car. It was probably $8,000 cheaper than equivalent cars on the market, but it sold. Mm-hmm. So that was the right price for that car.
Yeah, yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, they are great cars. As you said, all we're talking about is the values of them or prices of them currently, I guess.
So, yeah, exactly.
I guess, Jonathan, then before we open up, because I'm very keen for everybody to get a question in, so or as many people that would like to anyway, but from the finance point of view, you said that, you know, you can almost have a little bit of a heads up and see where things are going. So what's kind of the general consensus as we head to 2024?
I think... funny enough, we've started in the last week or so to get a bit busier finance-wise. And I think the truth is people have to come to terms with the fact that things have changed permanently. We've had it a bit too good too long with residuals. You've had people buying cars left, right and centre, driving them for 2 years and selling them for pretty much what they bought them for. And rates, I think... Yeah, they might move 0.25%, 0.5%, even 1%, whatever it is. But I think next year rates are going to be pretty consistent throughout the year. And we're starting to see it already that people are starting to accept that they've got to pay a higher rate if they want to drive that car. Mm-hmm. And they will do exactly the same thing as you just said. There'll be a price point where they'll go, oh, I've only got 30 years of my life left. And, I just want that car.
Yeah.
And that's it. And if it gets to a certain point, they'll buy it. And that's it. So I don't think it's all bad. I think it's just a bit of a reset rather than,
totally agree.
You know.
Yeah. How far do you think we're going back? Sort of, is it COVID or is it before that? When we're, where are we?
Again, like you said, we all have kind of forgotten that cars, God, when I was a kid growing up, looking at high-end cars, they used to lose the VAT, you know, straight away and a bit more. And that was every car.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I think we've just been kind of conditioned. And look, we're all try to be clever and with our finances, and we want to drive nice cars. So we've just rode the horse and had a bit of a good time.
Yeah, real life's coming back, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and look, there's probably, I was saying to a friend of mine earlier on that we all forget that we're approaching Christmas now. Motor trade does go a little bit quieter over Christmas historically, so I think once we get past Christmas. I don't think cars personally are going to, I don't know what you guys think, but I don't think cars are going to go down much further than they have already.
There's already certain cars that you look at and you think,
you're starting to see cars now that look like good value. So,
I mean, ironically, things like 992 Turbo S.
Yeah, exactly.
You look at them now and I'm like, to go any, if like speed purely is your thing, you've got to probably spend four times that car's value to get anything quicker.
Yeah.
So they, you look at them now and I think you can get them from sort of, probably late 150s, early 160s, upwards, something around that. Yep. And that same car 18 months ago might have started with a 2.
Yeah.
That's my book value. Yeah. And especially the other dynamic that we sort of haven't touched on is that the replacement for that car might well be a hybrid, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, each to their own. But if you want a car that runs purely on old dinosaurs, they ain't making another one.
Yeah.
And I think because there's been so much news with that car, the 992, the Turbo S, that they have taken such a big hit, and people are like, oh, you shouldn't be able to buy one of those. But actually, they have taken such a big hit that I wouldn't be surprised if you could buy one and then actually go and use it for a year, and then they'll still be worth the same next year.
Agreed.
Totally.
Because it's a lot of car for the money now, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And it's a shame you can't get everyone that writes something about them with an opinion to go and drive one just on a forum, because I'll tell you what, they get out of that car, they'll be scrambled. Yeah. Well, you know, they're a different grade.
Yeah. I have to say, before we pass it over, this is exactly why we're talking to you guys, because while everybody else is reading and watching and listening to commentary from those that maybe don't work 9 to 5 in the trade and who might be painting a dystopia and you know, chucking hyperbole into the fire constantly, and you guys are already seeing like the offshoots of potential. And it's fantastic that you're sharing that with everybody here. I'm sure there's going to be a few searches for 992.
Also, we buy them as well.
We
all three of us sitting here buy cars.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we don't just, you know, not criticizing forums, but there are unfortunately lots of people on forums that like to talk a lot, but they don't buy cars.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, also sometimes the headline of an article. I mean, everybody wants clicks these days. So the more, you know, rash you make the headline, the more clicks that it gets, and then it goes viral. And it's not necessarily true. I'm not trying to defend that the market has shifted 100%, but I'm not sure it's as bad as what some people are saying.
Yeah, there's a danger of almost getting talked into it in a way, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So,
fantastic, gents. Thank you for the insight you've shared so far. It's at this point, we'd love to open up to you guys and girls in the audience. So any questions on the marketplace? It's always scary going first.
You've talked about the return, say, of depreciation to the newer cars. Where do you see the classic market going? Is it going to be the same? Or where's that going from here?
So I sell quite a lot of old cars, not just Porsches. And I've been busy this year, very busy. And they haven't all been Porsches, as I say. Porsches are my thing, but I've been busy. And I try to find really good cars that are unusual for good reason. And I believe if you've got the best cars, you will sell them. And the classic cars, I think they're, I wouldn't say a better bet because it's a different market, but they are. It's a safe place, yeah. They certainly haven't dropped like some of the newer cars have.
I think what Jonathan's saying is
a finite.
Yeah, is exactly that. It's almost totally separate thing to say 991s almost really backwards. You know, you could almost classify 997s and 6s in that. But
it's a different owner, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, big time. Yeah, I mean, same. We don't sell as many classic stuff as you, obviously, but we've sold the most expensive classic Porsche we've ever sold this year. But the same theme, it was the best of its type with a great color, great provenance, and everything else to go with it. I think sometimes when you look, well, it's probably about 2 or 3 years ago, people would look at air-cooled pricing of, say, a 964 Carrera 2 and just sort of stagger at it. But now people are accepting that's what they trade at, that's what they're worth, and on we go. And the biggest factor in that is they ain't making any more of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're only going, you know, that particular niche is a whole podcast on its own of why they're doing what they're doing. But yeah, you just can't recreate that car ever again. So I think they're a safe bet. The only caveat to that is quality, isn't it?
See some, there's a huge range, isn't there, just because you know it could be, one could be worth 50, then one, the best could be worth 100. So it's just knowing what you're buying,
and the buyers know that too.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes people, probably you guys probably find it too, where someone will say, why is your car 17 grand more than the other one? It's like, go and have a look at it, go and have a look at ours, let's have a chat.
Why are you here? You know.
Yeah. And people are like that, though, aren't they? Kind of, sometimes, you know, I with, you know, the guys that work with me, I put the shoes on the other foot. You know, if you were going to go and buy a £100,000 air-cooled car, would you really take a flyer with someone you've not heard of, or they've only got one air-cooled car and 23 330 diesels? I wouldn't. I'd pay 10, 15, 20% more to have that provenance, because when you come to sell it, that came from XYZ specialist dealer. Okay, that adds to that car's credibility. So, yeah, it's another podcast app. Good question, though.
Very good question.
With the classic cars, is there a fact which you mentioned recently, or sort of posed the idea that some of the older classic cars, the market of people who are interested in them is dwindling as people grow and they have their own sort of classic, you know, the 997's their car rather than a 3-2. And does that affect things?
So I find this very much with the worst offenders at the moment are Aston Martin for me. I sell quite a lot of Aston Martins, and things like DB6s, backwards, you know, they're having a really tough time, because a lot of the guys who, I don't know, had the poster like I did of a 930 turbo and they're all a Countach or 355 F40, whatever it was, they might have had, you know, James Bond and his DB5, and unfortunately those guys are quite, you know, a little bit older now, and or no longer with us is the fact.
Yeah.
So the market has diminished. Another classic example is the Jaguars. A lot of the cars that we used to sell at Hexagon, the Jaguar market has diminished as well. The old XKs, that sort of thing. Porsche, I think, is less affected.
The 70s cars aren't as high as they used to be.
But the
993s are favourable, would you say?
Yes, that's true. But I think Porsches are less affected.
Yeah.
Just because of what they are.
I think it's natural as a generation gets older. They always say you go after your poster cars.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're 40 years old, you might be going for, you know, your early 90s cars. If you manage to gain wealth and you're able to buy your poster cars at an earlier age, then more people in your generation catch up and they start buying them. Well, there's still the same amount on the market, or there's still the same amount made. So the prices go up. It's natural. And as generations die off, then so do the poster cars and the need for those cars too.
I suppose it could be then maybe that it's a wave coming through. As people accumulate wealth and the ability, the wave goes through and then the car settles back maybe to where it was before.
The other thing with, I was thinking about this question randomly the other day, because there's certain cars out there that are icons of what of their type. So a Range Rover, a 911, Corvettes, love Corvettes. Cars like that, which you say the word to someone and they know what it looks like. And because of that, if you have a 992 or you have a 2-litre short wheelbase, my 10-year-old daughter will tell you they're both 911s. And because of that, it's sheltered from it. Because if, I don't know Jags as well as Jonathan, but if you said to a 22-year-old, an XK120,
he wouldn't know what it was.
And so then there's no thing that's going to lead him to go, what's the back history to that car that's current? There's no cool current Jag. Tell me I'm wrong. Anyway, but there's no modern version of that car that'd grab you by the nuts and go, you need to buy the classic version of that. Whereas you could see a 992 RS and go, fuck, I want the 2.7 RS version of that.
I want the granddad.
That doesn't happen with many models. And that's why I think we're sheltered a little bit.
Totally.
I'd pre-prep that.
It's great work. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Got to, yes. I think.
Whoa, where shall I go?
So Kib chucks his hand up first. But yeah, well, I've raw, but yeah, maybe offers pass the mic.
I'll pass it back. Yeah,
thank you.
Selling a car to a specialist is always a fraught time, trying to find who to sell it to and stuff. Is there a certain type of car that if someone calls you about? You know, what is the model that if someone calls you and says, I'm trying to sell this car, you guys go, yes, I want that? straight away? And is there also a type of car you guys try and avoid? I'm trying to think about those C2 cabs probably, but I'm just wondering if there's anything that straight away, either end of the spectrum, that you think is really cool or really hard to stock.
What are you selling, Paul?
Nothing at the moment.
996 Tipper.
For me, it's as much about knowing what buys and sells. You know, clearly, it's a numbers game. You've got to stock and sell what people want. But we were talking about this earlier, is that sometimes I just go, I like that. And if I like that, chances are someone else is going to. So on the basis that we all put our nuts on the block to buy that car, it sometimes doesn't mean that it's something that some person on a forum thinks is a good idea. I don't care if they think that's good or bad. Based on 20 years of experience, I go, there ain't many of them, or there's millions of them, but this one's good because of this, and the provenance is good. And do you know what? I've known the last four owners. We've maintained. It's a good question, but unfortunately, there's not a spreadsheeted answer for it, because sometimes it's just a gut feeling. Yes. And when you've got it in stock, you go, I don't know, the universe supports you. And you're like, I think that will sell because I think it's a cool car. And inevitably it does, hopefully.
And I also think that, I mean, I've had it before where I bought a car and it sold the day afterwards, and then I bought it back and I've had it for 6 months.
Yeah.
And
it's
only done 500 miles more when I bought it back. But, you know, it was the same photos. It was marketed exactly the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can do your best by buying, you know, the cars with the best spec, and that's what we obviously look for. But there's a level, we do have to take a risk when we purchase a car. And as long as you get it right, let's say 90% of the time, then you should be okay.
Doesn't answer your question.
So if I could go next. So so you mentioned a return to depreciation and the concept of kind of cars depreciating again. And you also talked about interest rates having gone up and people just accepting that they have to pay more now to have a car. Does that mean that cars are going to become more or less mileage sensitive on price? And therefore, are people going to say, actually, I really want it, I'm going to drive it, it's going to depreciate? Or actually people going to do the reverse, which is, well, you know, if I drive it, mileage is going to go up and therefore price is going to come down. And so I'm going to be, you know, because you could see both ends of the spectrum.
I think my gut feel is probably that if they're accepting higher interest rates or accepting the car's going to depreciate, then they're going to drive it more, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Personally. You know, it's a kind of...
Because otherwise you're accepting the depreciation and not using it, so what's the point?
Yeah.
So I think the buyer would have logicked that in his mind that...
It's not an investment anymore.
Yeah.
It's more of a toy to make you happy and, you know, hopefully you enjoy it. And rather than a lot of cars, unfortunately, I think have been bought in the past because people want them to be good investments, which...
The other thing is, it's like, yeah, don't get me wrong, you know, no, like you said earlier, no one wants to lose money on a car, right? But fundamentally, we buy them because they make your hairs on your arm stand up, and you go and have a laugh with your mates. And, you know, we've all experienced someone that was here last year that's not here this year. And if they wanted something and they didn't buy it and use it, enjoy it, what's the value in that? I personally don't think there is any. You know, there's a tipping point, but even then, if someone's like, I'm going to do 30,000 miles a year in this 911, wow, you're going to have an absolute hoot. It's going to cost you. But that's the cost of stuff.
I remember selling a car to a guy at Hexagon many years ago, and it was a 993 Turbo. And this guy had terminal cancer, and he bought the car because it was what he wanted, and he couldn't really afford it, but it was his last...
To tick it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So...
And actually, if you compare it with... Porsche is still great. I mean, if you'd have, let's say, a 992, even now, if you'd have done 20,000 miles on it, it would have cost you, and you'd have bought it in 2019 for $100,000. Yeah. And now what, it would be low 80s, let's say. Yeah. I mean, you've had 4 years out of that. I mean, before COVID, when the interest rates were a lot lower, I had a friend paying 1600 quid a month on an RS6. I mean, still the depreciation on that Porsche that you've owned, if you bought it outright, has been, has, you know, it's a, you've had a lot better value and pound for the miles, haven't you? Mm. Yeah. So
great shout. Yeah, I guess that's where kind of Porsche has been such a nice place to be for such a long time, off the back of that confidence, I guess, alone.
As sort of maybe a neat segue into the question I had, it's kind of a little bit like the last one. The great sort of Jerry Springer says, if you've got the lowest mileage Porsche, you lose, right? Why do you think we have in the UK such an unhealthy, you know, obsession with putting miles on cars? When you talk to people in the US or you go to Europe, they go, you guys in the UK are nuts. You've got these great pieces of kit and you don't use them. And you said cars are, you know, people view them as investments.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you actually really make a lot of money on cars once you've paid for storage, paid for servicing, you know, and you haven't had the chance to sort of amortize that over a really long period of time of 15, 20 years. They're not great investments, are they, really?
No, and I think, going back to what the gentleman said over there, that I think COVID helped it, and I think rates and residual values and all that sort of stuff, if someone's prepared to pay more now, then I think people will enjoy them more, and I think that's much more healthy, to be honest.
What about the unhealthy sort of obsession? It really does feel like in the UK we've got.
Yeah,
this,
you're
kind
right.
Of,
and to tell you the truth, I've been guilty of that, because where I sort of learnt my classic car trade, if you like, that was my old boss's mantra. That was his thing. You know, he would try and find the lowest mileage car on the earth, and that was his thing. But I think you're right. I think you're right. And some of you know, I've got a couple of cars and I do drive them much more often now. So
I'm not shy. I put a lot of miles on my car. I must be getting on for one of the highest mileage 997 GT3s around. So if I was to come to you and say, right, it's down 51,000 now on a 2009. And I can't remember what you did on yours, Paul, but I mean, say someone came along to you with 30,000 miles.
Mm.
What really is the difference in price, do you think, in that sort of car? And I'm going to say then, turn that on its head and say...
I think it depends on maintenance as well, because a lot of these cars that have got low mileage, they get stuffed away, they don't get maintained.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys agree with this.
100%, yeah.
Sometimes, in fact, quite often, a higher mileage car drives better than a low miler.
Yeah, certainly.
Because they've been looked after, they've been driven.
So all things,
and also you have to spend a lot, don't you, on because you know, it's been sat there for too long.
Rubber bits, you know, top mounts and drop links and
stickers. Yeah. all things being equal, and no stickers. I mean, I often think, you know, it's like you're talking 10 or 15 grand, which over say 5 years. And equate that into miles, you know, as we say, like memories and so on. I mean, so what? 10, 15 grand, you know, where's your price on that? You know,
Price of pleasure, isn't it?
Yeah. You couldn't rent it that cheap for the difference. Yeah, you couldn't go and rent a GT3 and do that many miles in it.
Yeah.
I think if you do take those stickers off, Guy, there's going to be like a ghosted Rothmans thing under there, isn't it?
Can I just go back to Andy Bowers and say it's not Jerry Springer? Yeah. How dare you? You better not be listening. Maz, you've got a question.
You mentioned that the prices are stabilising, but how do the external stresses like insurance and the cost of maintenance and parts that are internally rising, they don't seem to be coming down. On top of that, what's happening with the economies, predictably probably going to stay at the interest rates that we've got currently. How's that really going to fare into next year in terms of car prices? Because my analysis of the situation is that if those things don't temper off, then the customers that want to buy the RS products, the GT products, they're going to get less and less and less as the wealth gets taken away from the middle classes, let's say.
I think it's an interesting question, but when you look at actual realities of it, so, you know, a paper might say cost to service your car has risen by 15%. For the last 10 years, it's only been 3%. If you look at the aggregate cost to service your car, let's say it's a £100,000 GT3, for example, and it's a grand, and now it's 1,100 quid, you ain't not going to service it. And that will not affect the price of that car. In fact, people like servicing their car, we find, because it's your pride and joy, you want to look after it, it's maintaining its provenance. So whilst I totally hear what you're saying, I think that's a bit of like what Lee was saying about, you know, people grabbing headlines. If it goes up a little bit, we're talking relative to the value of the car, the percentage of the increase in a oil filter it's less than it's probably cost to have this conversation. Same with insurance. Porsches are actually really, really good. If you look at, it's not a world we specialize in clearly, but things like four-wheel drives or Range Rovers, it costs probably, we've got a client who lives in Knightsbridge, has got a brand new Range Rover, and that I think costs him something like 14 grand a year to insure it, whereas a 992 RS is something like £3,000. Yep. So I think we're sheltered a little bit, yeah. I think
it's the Range Rover problem, isn't it? Where there was 5,000 stolen in London apparently last year, and you know the new ones were coming in, they couldn't get insured, so then they were letting them go. It was a strange time because, you know, when we were seeing the trade deals go on and people were paying when the Sport was brand new, 10 grand over, yeah, you've got customers in London who can't take the delivery of the cars because they can't get insured. So, and then, you know, you had the SVR, the SVRs was trading at, I mean, we sold one for, I think, about 80 grand, and now you can buy them for, what, 50, 60, and again, you can, it's the insurance problem, but actually some people will be insuring those, will be buying those cars and taking the insurance on the chin because there's been such a decrease in price.
But again, I'm like, I'd love to see the like real numbers of that. I'm like, that's like 20 Range Rovers a day or something.
Yeah.
Who's buying those? Where are they going? Like,
exactly.
It might be true, but. Yeah,
I think it definitely is happening. I mean, we had a phone call today and we sold a guy a Range Rover and somebody tried to steal it from him on his driveway, so we bought it back off him. I think they are attracting a bit of bad news at the moment with that, but then they also represent a lot of car for the money.
Yeah.
So if you do live in the country and you've got a driveway where you can put it away, then it's a lot of car for the money at the moment. Yeah.
Just don't leave your wallet in it.
I was just going to say, Range Rover podcast is now over. Let's get back onto Porsche.
Proper like independent adjudicator. Yeah.
Enough of that.
Yeah.
Right, who's got a question?
I've got it. Go on, James.
Apologies for taking it back to 992 because we keep bouncing back to it. Sorry, a bit of feedback. I'm genuinely interested in the 992 Turbo S's. Lots of YouTubers have put videos out recently with the Auto Trader historical algorithm. Just simply the question is did they start off with massive margins and now they're selling them closer to what it owes them, or are they taking massive hits on them currently?
So these guys own these cars and they're telling...
No, Porsche retailers. So if you look at the OPC network, these YouTubers are looking at the car was first advertised in August for...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
they're looking at the analytics on how the cars have come down. And
yeah, some of them have got sort of a 40 grand variant. So, did they start with... 50 grand.
I think it's an interesting one when you're valuing cars and buying cars, and I can see a man smiling in the audience there, is that a lot of the time people let's say on that type of car might raise an eyebrow at the margin that's across it, but if it goes the wrong way, you ain't buying it back from me. So you've got to engineer that margin in to make sure, and I know you know this anyway, but you've got to engineer that margin in to make sure you're not left high and dry on it. But I think on some of those cars, they are taking those hits. There are not maybe that full amount because they would have had a margin to start. But yeah, and that's part of the correction, and that's the less glamorous side of doing what we do, that you take some pain every now and then. That's what happens, unfortunately.
James, were some of those prices, the higher prices, were they premiums? Were they sort of, you know, lightly used 992 Turbo S's with a 40 grand premium? So they've come back 50 grand and now they're 10 grand below list, not 50 grand below list.
Yeah,
they were
the...
Sorry. Yeah.
I'm going to get a bit of feedback here, but I'm ducking down. Yeah, they were all sort of typical OPC Turbo S's, 200 grand or, you know, late hundreds. And obviously these YouTubers are picking the worst ones. Yeah. But some of them had, you know, 199 grand and then they're up for 169,995. You know, full disclosure, I used to run JLR businesses, but I know roughly what sort of margin you need in a late vehicle like that for all the reasons that Greg said, but I'm just genuinely interested to know whether they're taking a massive bath on them. And also, I guess a second question is, why are there so many? I'm led to believe it's because people couldn't get GT product, and they are now. So you've got sort of lots of late Turbo S's, which is as close as you could possibly get your hands on.
The one thing that I would say is I remember in COVID, and there was obviously a supply issue. And I think it's with any kind of bubble where you get people coming up to you who aren't really car people, but you know, they're wealthy and they're saying, I've just put in an order for a 992 Turbo S because I've heard this. And they're the last in the market. That's when you should start probably worrying a little bit. And I think that, so the demand wasn't actually there for that car. The demand was there to make the money because that's what they were getting told that other people were doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the people who were doing that were 911, you know, they were very passionate. They watched that market. They were into them. They did very well at the time because they bought them because they wanted to and there was a shortage of supply. So when other people who don't really know what they're doing try and copy that and then put the orders in and then the supply comes and then everybody's trying to flip their car at the same time, that's probably had an influence on it too.
And they've only got a certain amount of, let's say they can build 100 cars a day. The Porsche will obviously look at what's coming through and supply the order, you know, the orders that are coming in. So it'd be really interesting to see in like 20, 21, 22, like, is a Turbo S, was that higher sold than, say, a Carrera? Because the margin that Porsche as a manufacturer make out of those cars is wild. It is absolutely mind-blowing because the Turbo S doesn't cost an awful lot more to build than a Carrera. And when I first heard that and saw the stats, I couldn't believe it, but it's apparently true. So, you know, as a business, they're just going to prioritize the biggest margin car that comes through the order sheet. And if that happens to be that, exactly, they're going to go, well, if today we can build 100 cars, they will be 99 of them are Turbo S's.
Long term, I don't think that's very good for Porsche, though. No, because I think they've done exactly what Ferrari, well, they tried to do what Ferrari did, and they've come unstuck because they produced far too many cars.
Yeah, because was it the beginning of this year or the last financial year they were aiming for 20% net or something, or but I can't remember what they were looking to push it up another 2 or 3%, and I thought, okay, it's going to be interesting. But yeah, the other thing is that they're obviously going to facelift it. So the fact that there's a lot more coming onto the market is probably because people are foreseeing that and want to get out of it before the next one comes to not lose their shirt on it.
Is there a fact as well? I don't know what the numbers are here, but there's been quite a lot of price hikes on new Porsche, haven't they? So if you've got a 992 Turbo S in, when did it come out? 2020? 2021, could you have paid 170 grand for it? And in 2023, you're paying 190 grand for it because they're a lot more expensive. So you could have sold a 2020 car lightly used to someone who couldn't get a 2023 car for 190 grand a little while ago. Now you can't. It's back to 160.
I know.
But that's par.
Yeah. I know with the price hikes have definitely helped when I've had some cars in stock, you know, Audi RS3s, they were flying out at the start and then they kind of plateaued a little bit because people were like, I'm not paying more for them, and then the prices went up and then it made your car look like a better value car. So yeah, it's definitely had an influence on it, I think.
Those YouTube lies, eh, Lee?
You've been gagging for that since I threw you under the bus about the fantasy garage. I guess, Henry, like following on what you were saying there, where you've got like the people trying to predict the market, or perhaps are onto it early, like the flippers, and then you've almost got like the floppers that are trying to chase the tail end, not that they realise where it's at, but in a way they contribute to the next cycle again. And you know, the beauty of it is things change constantly. And you know, some of us, maybe all of us, remember when, you know, 964 values, for example, you know, the cheapest air-cooled Porsche you could buy was a 964. And here we are, and it's a totally different story. So, and the only thing that's changed is time, you know. So it's interesting.
And also, it's when the market's buoyant like that and people have the confidence, they go and spend when probably they shouldn't. I mean, the investment strategy is, you know, be confident when others are fearful, and fearful when others are confident. Or is it greedy? Sorry. greedy, not confident. So yeah. I honestly think that there will be opportunities at the moment because of the way the market is. So if you are a cash buyer and you are looking to go and, you know, invest and diversify your wealth, then you could be looking for that blue chip car and get a better deal now than you would have done last year.
Yeah. Fantastic insight.
Also, one more thing. Turbo S's are 3 or 4 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
So their finance agreements are coming up to the end of the year. Wow. And that's exacerbated it as well.
Perfect storm.
Yeah. Have we got any final questions from the DNHC? Yeah, James.
Hi, just a quick question. Has the introduction of turbos on all the Carrera models from the 991.2 created another kind of segment? So it's not water-cooled versus air-cooled, it's now water-cooled, air-cooled and turbo?
I think there was, when it first came out, there was certainly a little bit of, oh, these are last of the naturally aspirated ones. But they're so good, those 3-litre turbos, that you do tend to find that, you know, even the staunchest naturally aspirated fan would drive one of the current crop of those 3-litre cars, which, you know, they're a different type of car. They're not, you know, not an air-cooled track car. But they're so good that actually there's so little between it. It's not nowhere near as sort of black and white as those ones. There'll always be people, you know, that don't like the turbocharged sort of, you know, feel to it, but it's such a linear way of how it performs. And you know, as a daily driver, we were talking about it earlier, it actually suits the nature of the car slightly better. And obviously those cars are newer now, so the NA cars are getting on a little bit. So if you're after something that's, you know, under warranty with low mileage, and you want things like, you know, the latest Apple CarPlay and stuff like that, you've got no choice.
What car have you got, James?
I love it.
Definitely.
If it's owned by us, yeah.
Talking, Greg, just thinking back to what you're saying about buying interesting cars for stock and cool cars and that kind of thing. When does where's the curve on something that becomes scarce because no one wanted it to being cool? And I don't mean a whole generation like a 964 or 996, but like that 991 manual that you've bought, Ruby Red. I think that's really cool. Mm. But the reason there aren't many of them is because people didn't want them.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
It's like my business partner, Ollie, says, always go for the underdog, because that'll be the one that comes back. I don't know. How do you explain cool? I don't know. Yeah. It's an intangible, isn't it? It's either is or isn't. I guess if it's not trying to be cool, it's cool.
It's funny because you had that manual 992 for a lot longer than I thought you ought to. If only I'd had the money.
No idea what you're talking about.
And that was really, thought that was mega.
I think it's probably down to the media thing, because people go, well, it's true, you know, they drive both of them for 14 minutes in Spain and go, this is the one you want. And then people base their purchasing decision off of that. Whereas the reality is, if you can, it's hard to, obviously, but if you go and live with the car, or you speak to people that have lived with them for, you know, more than 10 minutes, actually sometimes the answer is different to what is out there, but it just takes a critical mass of people to go, actually, no, these are really cool. Preference. Yeah, exactly. You know, we're all different. That's why they make choices for, you know, options, sorry, on the cars. But I don't know. It's hard. What do you think? That's a hard question to answer because cool is...
Yeah, it's very individual, isn't it? It's like you said earlier on about you just get a feeling. And I've bought some probably quite weird cars before, but yeah, if I like it, then hopefully someone else might like it. that's the kind of obviously you're flipping a coin sometimes, but if you come across a really good car with really good history and it's been looked after and serviced and it's been loved, and you know, it might not be everyone's cup of tea because of the colour or something, but someone will like it.
Yeah,
because it's different.
I mean, only one person needs to buy it, don't they? Well, only one person can buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
One time. And in this day and age, in with Instagram and the like, is there value in having a so something interesting like that? So, you know, you can put it on the gram, or if someone's, you know, does an interesting search on Auto Trader, like for a manual 991, they won't have many. Well, they'll find you two, actually, interestingly, at the moment.
Yeah.
But is there value in that in this day and age?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think people want to be different to each other. You know, you don't want to have the same thing as everybody else. And it does. It just by nature of it being a different colour, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, obviously colour subjective, but it makes it stand out and therefore gets attention. That red car Auto Trader picked up and put on their feed of Auto Trader, which is mad. You think of all these things we got here, and they chose the least expensive car.
I think we also went through a stage, didn't we? I mean, every bloody car that I was selling a few years ago was silver, black, or grey.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of black cars actually, but,
but they're great colours.
I've got some quite bright cars as well, which some people. But I mean, I've got a yellow car that my missus said, "You've bought a yellow car," but my daughter loves it. It's a bit different.
So, and also the tastes do change, don't they?
Yeah,
tastes of people do change.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the best investment cars that you've seen were the most rogue, unpopular colours in the day. Okay. 20 years later, it's going for 20% more because of the colour.
Look at green.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. Green was a no-no, wasn't it, for many years?
For years.
Mm-hmm. Green should never be seen, wasn't it? The saying.
Can you just ask the panel that first worst, last best question?
Yeah,
go
on,
Alex. I really like it. I can't remember what it is, but...
Yeah, so
the best thing about the podcast.
Is it?
You're not wrong,
Alex.
Just four questions.
Take over, Alex. Go for it.
I can't remember what it
was. First, what was worst.
This is your cars, your car history.
These cars we're talking about, right?
What was your first? What was your
best? Worst.
Yeah.
First, worst.
First, worst, yeah. Best, and next.
And the only rule is...
They can't be the same car.
Your worst can't be your first.
That was it.
First car. We're talking non-Porsche.
Your first ever car.
A Volkswagen Polo on a C-plate. It was a 1.2 CL in red.
Lovely.
First.
Sweet.
What's the next one? Worst. Oh, Jesus. Don't buy bad cars. the worst car I've ever bought. Actually, I do know. I bought a 323 Coupe when I worked at BMW, thinking I was going to be...
It's a great car.
I bought it thinking I was going to be the kiddie turning into some kind of track weapon. I didn't drive it before I bought it. I got in and thought, whoops. that's probably the worst. I had it about 3 days. What was the next one, sorry?
Best.
Best car I've ever owned. Oh, man. They're all best for different reasons, but I'd probably say... I'd probably say I had a red 964 C2. It was the second one that I ever owned. And it did some cool stuff in it. Had it off the clocks. My kids loved it and they were young at the time and they could get in the back of it. So that'd probably be the best. And what was the last one?
Next.
Next car. No. next car. Oh, blimey. We're really lucky that we've just taken delivery of a 992 GT3. So I feel like we've got that kind of ultimate, for me, box ticked as club sport. So if I was to choose my ultimate next or what I'd want next, I'd probably upgrade my daily to have a current gen KN at some point. That would be cool to have them as a pair.
Excellent. Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah. Henry, first car?
So first car. So I was in a unique situation. I never really, my dad was in the rental industry. So they had a Golfs or Focus or a Ford Focus. So I used to swap between the two. But the first car after I passed my test was a Golf, which was probably too nice of a car for me to have, having just passed my test. my dad car? Definitely would have thought so. My worst car was when I scratched a Golf and got given a Berlingo. As a punishment. And
best
car that I've owned. God, personally, I suppose the first Porsche that I bought for myself, was a 964. It was an evocation into based on a RS IROC car. I just had a wonderful experience, you know, searching for it, finding it. The car, the guy who was selling the car didn't really know what he was selling, and I found the history online. Obviously, I found the 54-page build of the car, so it just was a lot of investigation. It put it all together and just really ignited more my interest for it, and I just really enjoyed it. So I did love that experience, and then I kept it for a little bit, and I tried to put it up at a price that I thought I wouldn't sell it at, and then I sold it. But I suppose that's probably.
Yeah, and what about next?
Next car that I would... Well, I kind of swap around because I'd use a stock vehicle for a little bit to, you know, test drive them for a little bit. And the next car that I would love to buy, and it's going to take a long time to buy, I think, would be the 997 GT3 RS 4-litre. That would be the dream, the pinnacle.
Strong choice. Strong choice. Great stuff. Jonathan, first car?
So my first, you're talking about personally.
Yeah.
So first car was a very beaten up old 1.3 L, I think it was, Escort, Mark III Escort, which was £400, and was just, I mean, it was just all different colours. It was just bad. It was really bad. It was worn out. So that was definitely the first and worst, I think. I quickly then moved on to a Golf GTI, which I actually bought one a couple of years ago because it was probably my favourite car when I was younger. Okay. I've got an old Golf Mark II 16 valve, and I've bought one a little while ago, so I've restored that and kept it.
Okay, so is that your best?
So probably... My favourite car is probably, this isn't very original because you guys have just said 964, but you've seen the car, I've got a blue 964, which I bought off an old chap. I was chasing him for 3 years to buy this car. And in the end, he phoned me and he said, you know, this is what I want for it. It was too much, but I bought it anyway because I really wanted this car. It had a great service history. He'd obviously loved it. Needed a little bit of work done to it, which I got Jazz to do. And I've still got it.
Okay, fantastic.
So what's that, a coupe?
Yeah, C2 coupe, manual. Yep.
Lovely.
Mm. Worst car, I need to ask again because it's not allowed to be the first.
Worst car. I had a very scary incident in a Fiat Uno Turbo.
Pray tell.
I was going to college and aquaplaned it, and I think I spun it probably three times on a busy main road. Unfortunately, I don't know how, but there was nothing on this busy road at that moment. And I remember the car coming to a stop, facing the right way, and there was no talent in that, by the way, and I was just shaking. Yeah. I just sat there for a few moments before I drove off, and that was probably, for me, the worst handling car, or so I thought at the time, anyway. That's probably it. But,
and what about next car?
Next car. Probably similar to you, and again, I'm not copying him, by the way, but 4-litre RS for me is is, I did get a car recently, which I've always kind of wanted, but I bought it actually for stock and ended up keeping it. So I've got a 991 Touring GT3, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it. And I like the fact it's quite, you know, quite low numbers, quite rare, a bit understated. No one really knows what it is unless you're one of us lot. So I really like that car. I think the only car really is a car that I'll probably never be in a full terrain, which is a Carrera GT and a 4 litre. So, but
amazing. Okay. Well, yeah. I hope all your dreams come true. To be fair, because that's quite a garage.
Mine's easiest.
I've got one almost a quick question, because I know time's getting on for everybody, but I guess a lot of us here in the DNHC would like to know. So we take the microphones away, pretend the guys and girls aren't here, and we say, guys, you know, what's the car to buy for 2024? If you could lump something in, and obviously it's just an opinion, and but yeah, what is that car?
Put a run on them.
Yeah.
Curveball one. It's the car you want to keep for another 3 or 4 years. So, because if things are up and down or they're not going anywhere, you got to buy what you want. And if you buy something that you love and enjoy driving, you love looking at, you can afford to run it, you can afford to buy it, that's the car you should buy. And I know that's a slightly diplomatic answer, but it's true. In terms of, you know, models out there, you know, we might have another bump in the road in the middle of next year when someone invades someone and it all goes real wonky. Who knows? So life's short, buy the one you want and can afford.
Cracking.
Wise words.
If diplomatic.
I'm here all day.
yeah, that's spot on.
So I 100% agree with that answer. Obviously, you should buy the car that you want. Personally, how my brain kind of works when it comes to these things and what, you know, weighs a lot on what I want is the values and how much they're going to depreciate and how much enjoyment I can get out of that and the smiles per pound, let's say. And for that reason, I would probably pick a 991, a generation one, because they're an older car now. They're so much fun to drive. They're naturally aspirated and they sound amazing, and they're not, the technology isn't too old. You could get Apple CarPlay fitted, and yeah, I'm in a 991 Carrera 4S at the moment. And you know, if I did lose a bit of money on it, and obviously I'm in the trade, so I have bought it trade and hopefully can get out of it at more of a retail price, having put 10,000 miles on. And I hate losing money on cars because obviously it's my job. If I did with that car, if I lost a little bit, I have had a lot of enjoyment out of that car. And, yeah, I think it's probably a pretty safe bet, as is the 997s. But I just like that, the later technology of the 991, and I just love the sound. Mm. So that would be my
cracking tenry. Yeah. Thank you. Jonathan, to finish.
So I would, after all these questions and what you guys have just said, I would say exactly the same thing, agree with that. But I think 997 for me, and I'm talking about any 997, I think they're just great value now.
So what, Gen 1 or Gen 2?
Yeah. I just think they're great value. And I know there's, you know, all the bad press on forums and all the rest of it, but it only affects a small percentage of the cars. You can get it sorted. In fact, most of them are now, I think. And I just think they're amazing value. And they're still, I don't know, it's like when you drive some of the bigger cars now, like the 992, 991 not so much, but when you get back into 997, it's almost like getting back into 964 for me now, because it's
proportionally
proportions, they're tight, you feel like you're wearing them.
It's a great size for the road, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, another nail in the 992's coffin, but it feels to me like it's too big. So I like the I really like the 997. And I think that, and I think you can pick one up, you know, you can, it's a big, you know, you can buy one for 25 grand or 150 grand, can't you? So mm-hmm. Everyone can have fun.
Yeah. There's a lot of choice in there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Very wise words. That does wrap up the podcast. I want to say thank you first and foremost to the DNHC. Fantastic questions, great participation, and some like incredible mileage from everybody to get here. Very much driven, not hidden, despite the challenging weather.
Should we give away some little prizes for?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
we've furthest driven. Who should we take? Absolutely. Should we go for?
Well, I don't want
Newcastle
to be the guy
or that... Netherlands. Which do you think wins it?
Why don't we do both?
It's gone.
Is
oh.
it? Yeah.
Well, we could.
Oh well.
I think Newcastle wins
yeah,
it then.
Yeah, it's a game of attrition. That's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well done, Andy, for reminding us on that. Yeah. So, all right, including selection boxes and a Christmas
selection
hat.
Selection box
incredible.
And a Christmas hat.
That's incredible.
And a little.
Very good.
Packet of stuff. I think we should also go for best dressed as well. Should we have a look round and see which we think?
What do you reckon, Max? Got the eagle eyes there. Christmas jumper. Come on. I saw there's a Christmas jumper that's 3D over there.
Oh, no, oh there's a Christmas jumper family.
I think it's got to be Christmas jumper family.
Yeah, I think so.
That's
yeah, it's got to be the Pearson.
Yeah, very well done for getting in the spirit.
And then the last prize that we were going to do was...
Sparta.
I'm not sure how you're going to split the prize between the two of you.
So someone's getting the hat, someone's getting the selection box, I reckon. Yeah.
And lastly, the idea was either dirtiest car or the most inappropriate car, but I've not been outside to see what's out there. Let's just go for the most inappropriate. Who came in the most inappropriate car today?
Someone's in the
Porsche. Yeah.
Come on now, take your selection box off.
Yeah.
What did you come in? Titan. Oh, a Titan, yeah.
I mean, he ain't making it home.
That is the most inappropriate, isn't it? Yeah, you get a second selection box. Okay. Take that home for the kids.
Yeah, gents, thanks very much. I think as well, and this particularly for guys and girls listening at home, you know, there's been so much said today, you know, listen to the podcast again and drink it in. There's been a lot of information and particularly I think if you're stripping back your own personal bias and we all have it as owners of certain models and whatnot, listen to that podcast again and really absorb what's been said by industry experts, you know, living and breathe it 9 to 5, while the rest of us are doing other things, you know. So there's a lot in there, guys. Thank you for your expertise. That's Greg at RPM Technic, Henry at Lakeside Classics, and Jonathan from Jonathan Franklin. So thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you all.
There we go then, gents. I do just want to say, Andy, like big thanks to you, because although you didn't say too much on that podcast, so other people might be thinking, you know, where's Andy B?
Where's Andy?
You were running around like a madman, passing the mic around to different people, ensuring everyone's levels.
It actually sounded good in the room as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, there was lots going on, and I think that's just worth pointing out that you make things happen there, buddy. So thank you.
All good. All part of the team.
Yeah. Agreed.
Awesome.
You know, as we start to do these kind of things, more of these kind of things, as the other folk have proven who are doing it, if you don't get the production right, then it's shit for the people in the room, and then it doesn't make for a good listen either.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's not easy to get these things right.
I think it sounded good when we were there last night.
Yeah.
From what I could tell, it'd be interested to get a little bit of feedback, actually. Well, I might sling out a little question on the WhatsApp group.
Good idea, but
it's recorded well as well. It sounds really good.
I think collectively we'd realized afterwards that we only scratched the surface last night. There are so many like subtopics. Greg pointed out at one stage, 964s, we could do a whole podcast chat on that.
Yeah,
so you know, whether we do like just that or just an air cooled or just a GT conversation, I think it's worth revisiting this concept once or twice actually throughout next year. Throughout 2024 we'd quite like to get on the road anyway.
And not just the concept of it being marketplace discussion, but other discussions about other subjects as well.
Agreed. Yeah. It's a nice evening out for everybody, but also lots of information bandied around as well. So it's like an open forum in a way.
Yeah.
So lots well,
it's great
to
see everybody chatting and you know, making good connections and yeah, everybody enjoying each other's company last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And good to have the old lanyards again as well. Really breaks the ice, always does.
Yes. That is good.
I think so. Helpful. But before we move on as well, I know we gave out some awards for furthest travelled, best dressed, etc. But also, Deb Whiting, big shout out to you. You were the only female there, and I apologise that that's the case, to be honest. So we'd definitely like to see more female DNHC members feeling comfortable enough to come to the events and get involved, you know. So, like, kudos to you, Deb. You're a trailblazer, and hopefully in 2024 we can see even more female enthusiasts join us on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
Awesome. We've got some admin to run through.
Yeah, what have we got? Shall I do a quick update?
Yeah.
Right. We have got Dylan Sandoval, who I mentioned before, who is in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Right. I think we should go over for a trip. Been wanting to go to Lake Tahoe for a long time. You've got any spare rooms there, Dylan? He runs a KN Diesel and a Cayman R.
Ooh.
He says he has big plans for both of them.
Lovely, 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 lovely. Cayman R, so we're going on about it all the time. So underrated.
Yeah.
And his KN, he said it's already got, as he describes it, a light off-road build.
It has indeed, yeah.
Yeah, he's going in that direction, which is pretty cool as well. And in Lake Tahoe, we like that. Just looks brilliant, doesn't it? Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine some snowboards chucked on the top?
Yeah, snowboards, wakeboards, bloody boat on the back, on the trail, all sorts of things. That's awesome, isn't it? He's living the dream. Living the dream, Dylan.
Good man, good man. Right, next up is Richard Hodson. Works driver based in Cheshire, has been a reader of Total 911 for years. I believe you've been speaking to him, Max.
Yeah, we've been chatting for a long time. We connected on Instagram through T911, actually, through my column about, you know, my time with the 997 and the 991. So yeah, he's a super guy. Good to have him on board. Not before time, Richard.
Good man. He hasn't got a 911. Hasn't got a Porsche at the moment. It's been very 911-ist then, wasn't I? He's on the hunt for a 997 GTS manual.
Yeah.
That's his dream. So if you know one that's going, give him a shout.
Yeah. He had a silver 991.2 GTS for a while, which is very nice.
Yes.
A little flirtation with that.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting going backwards in years. To the 997.
Yeah, well, I think that's his dream, but he's also considering 991.1S manual or touring. Sorry, not touring, a T.
Okay, yeah.
He's got a few things on his radar.
Yeah, I've just looked on the Nineworks marketplace. There's a lovely 997 C2 GTS from Paragon at 70K, but it is PDK. It's difficult. It's so difficult finding a stick shift 997 GTS.
Yeah. Okay. We have Peter Statton, who is a works driver. Haven't we got a Paul Statton as well?
Yeah, Paul Stratton.
Yes, Stratton. Sorry. Yeah. I'm just pronouncing it incorrectly. It is Stratton. Listens to the podcast and has kept meaning to support us. Bumped into a chap wearing a Nine Works hoodie at Bista on Sunday and encouraged him to join, which I think was Dom Harding.
That was Dom, yeah. That squares the circle on that one, doesn't it?
Well done, Dom. Peter, there's too many Peters and Pauls going on here. Peter is based in Lewisham, southeast London, and drives a 987.1 Boxster.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah. Good to have you on board. And well done, Dom. Good work. Good business development work there, Dom. Nice one.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay. Mike Vella as a privateer. He's based in Prince's Risba. He was recommended to join by Charlie West at CW Car Care.
Yeah. Again,
Squaring
the circle.
Squaring the circle. He drives a 992 C2S in white, which I believe he's put some pictures up on the WhatsApp
group. Yeah.
And it's got your favourite wheel choice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got the RS Spider wheel option on it. It's really good.
Looks very clean and nice. Yeah. Not in silver. They were in a darker colour, weren't they?
Yeah. Sort of dark grey.
Is that allowed on the white?
Well, it has a little silver rim on it.
It gets your silver approval.
Yeah, it works. Yeah, it's fine. I'm good with it. I'm on board.
All right, cool.
Nice car.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
No trouble.
Also got a couple of upgraders. I should apologize to the first one, which is Andy Bodrill. He upgraded a little while ago and I managed to miss his upgrade. He upgraded from Privateer to Works Plus. So your mention is out there. I do apologize for missing you. And also Nick Shivers, who's down here near in Romsey, has gone from Privateer to Works.
Lovely. That's so awesome. So awesome. Like, thank you to everybody that's joined and to those that feel it's good value to upgrade as well. That's absolutely mega.
You know, and just thinking on the, you know, the goodness that's going on here, you know, people bumping into each other and recommending and that sort of thing. You know, Charlie, who recommended us to Mike, I recommended to Charlie of CW Car Care that he got in touch with Maz at Garage Therapy to talk about his accreditation and the products and that sort of thing. So they've been in touch and they're talking now. So, you know, it's just sort of, you know, to use the term that you coined, Andy, spreading the love, you know, that's happening. It's happening within the, you know, within the community.
It's all good. It's all good. Talking to spread the love, I've got a bit of a spread the love this week.
Go on.
I thought I'd bring us into the spread the love, and come up with a Christmas present idea. So I was thinking, you know, if you've got a friend who could do with some love, why not gift them a DNHC membership? If you're already...
It's a great idea.
Yeah, if you're already a DNHC-er. If you're not a DNHC-er and your wife, your husband, your partner, your lover is looking to give you something this year, why not get a DNHC membership?
Absolutely.
Pose it to them.
Absolutely. What a great idea that is. So rather than a spread the love, it's a can you spread the love?
Indeed it is.
Do you know what I mean? So it's that time of year, isn't it, when you know you get the message from somebody saying, what do you want for Christmas?
There it is.
And you can say, there it is. And it will be the gift that keeps on giving, because every month you'll unlock all of the virtues of what is a lovely, lovely community.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, that person who says to you, God, you're impossible to buy for. I never know what to get you.
Yeah.
What about this?
Solved.
Yeah. Give me new mates in the DNHC so I don't have to talk to you again.
Oh, dear. I think you've just mucked it all up.
No, that's an excellent idea, Andy. Excellent idea. So, yes.
Yeah.
We're kid.
Right. Next week, we're back on the road, aren't we?
We are back on the road. It's a really cool idea. I think Nick Moda basically proposed we have a curry.
Yeah.
Months ago, this was, wasn't it? Nick Moda's up in town in London. We said, sounds great. And then, Andy, you had the foresight, really, to suggest, well, why don't we get Toby involved? So that's our number first and second Patreons, essentially.
It is.
Go for a curry and include those guys in our end of year review.
Yeah. Have a look back, see what we've been up to. Quite a lot.
There's been loads going on. We did one a year ago, of course, when we dressed up in silly costumes. We did a video of it on YouTube, so feel free to go and take a look. But yeah, kind of same thing. So we'll be posing those sorts of questions again as we review the Porsche year that was 2023. I guess from a podcast perspective, it kicked off with our Nine Works at the Warehouse back in January. We reeled off all the anniversaries that were coming up this year.
Yeah,
we're on the other side of those now, having driven many miles, met many new faces, seen many cool things. So we'll be looking back at all of that in one splendid podcast.
It'll be a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, on the other side of a lovely Ruby Murray.
Yeah, are we having the curry first or after? I can't remember. I think we should record before the curry.
I think we're recording before, aren't we?
Oh, we. Yeah, I think that's wise. Yeah. I think that's wise.
Yeah. Is it a drive up or a train up, Andy?
Don't know. But we best check the what's going on with the trains, because I think there's all sorts of strikes and things coming up first week of December. So
yeah, they're making a noise, aren't they? Yeah, hopefully we'll make far more sense next week in what is our last podcast of the series and of course of the year as well.
Yeah.
Although, should we do a works podcast to just review in detail our three favourite cars we've driven or three favourite drives?
Yeah, definitely. Like we'll definitely do that.
Whoa. Let's do that then. And until then, though, dear listener, we'll catch you very soon on Nine Works Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in.
See you soon.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden Collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.